We now turn to those letters and sounds of ancient Greek which do not have close equivalents in the English alphabet. However, these phonemes can be grasped and learnt without difficulty by comparing them with familiar phonemes in English and in some of the other commonly studied modern languages. Let's begin with a group of consonants known as the aspirates, represented by the letters theta, phi, and chi. The term aspirate is used for this group because each of these phonemes is characterized by a puff of breath, or aspiration, which distinguishes the phonemes represented by the letters theta, phi, and chi from their unaspirated counterparts, the letters tau, pi, and kappa. Looking at these aspirated phonemes individually, the letter theta is pronounced t, as the letters th are pronounced in the English word hothead, or as the t in the emphatically pronounced English word top, t. Notice how the aspirated t in top differs from the unaspirated t in the word stop. The letter phi is pronounced p, as the letters ph are pronounced in the English word uphill, or as the p in the emphatically pronounced English word pin, p. Notice here how the aspirated p in pin differs from the unaspirated p in the word spin. The letter chi is pronounced k, as the letters CKH are pronounced in the English word backhand, or as the K in the emphatically pronounced English word kin, K. Notice here how the aspirated K in kin differs from the unaspirated K in the word skin. In the pronunciation, then, of the aspirated and the unaspirated consonants, the aim is to pronounce the aspirates, theta, phi, and chi, with a discernible puff of breath or aspiration, and equally important, to pronounce the consonants tau, pi, and kappa without aspiration. This may appear difficult at first because we do not have these phonemic distinctions in English. A combination of attention and practice, however, should allow us gradually to hear these distinctions clearly and then to reproduce them. The last consonant to be considered is the letter rho. The sound of rho was that of a trilled R, rr, which has no counterpart in standard English pronunciation, but which is easily recognized as the R which is used in Italian, Spanish, and in many other European languages, including modern Greek. If one thinks of the sound of R in some Italian musical terms often heard in English, such as allegro, presto, maestro, or the name of the city, Roma, we can have a fairly accurate notion of the sound of the ancient Greek rho. Before leaving the ancient Greek consonants, I should point out that all doubled or twin consonants, such as double lambda or double mu, require a lengthening of the sound of the consonant. The only exception to this rule is a double gamma, in which, you remember, the first gamma is pronounced ng, like ng in the word sing. All other doubled consonants are simply held for a discernibly longer time duration than the single consonant. A double sigma, for example, would correspond to the length of the double s in the English word hiss, as opposed to the shorter duration of the single s in the English word sap. In the case of those consonants which are stops, such as tau, a doubling of the tau would require literally a longer stop before proceeding to the next vowel, comparable to the double T in the Italian word petto, as opposed to the incorrectly pronounced petto. This effect of lengthening, which is produced by doubled consonants, is of great importance in Greek poetry, where rhythms are based specifically on the length of the syllable. The effect of lengthening the sound of the consonant can also make a significant difference in the meaning of a word to a listener of ancient Greek. For example, the Greek word for mountain is oros, with a single rho. If we double the rho, making horros. The listener hears not the word for mountain, but the word for rump or buttocks. Now, despite occasional resemblances between these two objects, we would normally wish to preserve the semantic distinction. When we come to those letters of the Greek alphabet which represent vowels and diphthongs, native speakers of English are in a somewhat peculiar position. While many of the ancient Greek vowels and diphthongs do have approximate phonetic counterparts in English, the English phonemes are generally represented by letters which are quite different from those used for the Greek phonemes. The chief reason for this is what many linguists refer to as the Great Vowel Shift in English, a phenomenon which took place mainly during the 15th century. As a result of the Great Vowel Shift, most vowels and diphthongs in modern English are represented by different letters from those used in most other Indo-European languages, ancient and modern. However, the adjustment to a different system of vowel representation is not very difficult. Students of modern languages such as French, Spanish, Italian, and German make this adjustment quite rapidly. The same is true, I am sure, for students of ancient Greek. Vowels in ancient Greek have two elements which determine their distinctive phonemic characteristics. These elements are the quality of the vowel and the quantity or length of the vowel. The quality of the vowel is determined by the specific positioning of the speech organs as the air passes from the larynx out through the mouth. In English, this can be readily seen by observing the changed position of the tongue in the series of words bet, but, bought. In ancient Greek, there is a similar change in tongue position from the forward sounded eta, a, to the back sounded omega, or. These are some examples of different vowel qualities. The quantity or length of a vowel is determined by its time duration, that is, whether it is held for a relatively short or long interval. The Greek vowels alpha, iota, and upsilon in some syllables or words are found to be long, in other syllables or words are found to be short. It should be observed, however, that long alpha, iota, and upsilon differ basically from short alpha, iota, and upsilon not in quality, but only in quantity. This is clearly different from English, where, for example, long A differs from short A in quality, as can be seen in the words hate and hat. There is no general rule in ancient Greek to predetermine the length of alpha, iota, and upsilon. Their quantity simply must be learnt or looked up in the dictionary. The vowels epsilon and omicron are always short. The vowels eta and omega are always long, apart from certain exceptions in poetry. Let's now consider the vowels individually. Short alpha is pronounced ah, like the letter O in the English word top, or like the first A in the Italian word amare, ah. Long alpha is pronounced ah, like the letter O in the English word bava, or like the second A in the Italian word amare, ah. Epsilon, as we have seen, is a short vowel and is pronounced relatively closed, I, like the letter A in the English word mate, or like the letter E in the French word for nose, ne, I. Eta, by contrast, is pronounced long and open, a, somewhat like the letter E in the English word tend, but perhaps closer to the circumflex E in the French word fat, a. Short iota is pronounced e, somewhat like the vowel sound in the English word neat, or like the I in the French vite, e. Long iota is pronounced e, somewhat like the double e in the English word seed, or like the I in the French cultive. E. Omicron is pronounced short and relatively closed. O. Somewhat like the O in the French word mo. O. Short upsilon is pronounced with the lips quite closed and rounded. U. Like the U in the French words lune and brune. U. Long upsilon is also pronounced with the lips quite closed and rounded, but is of longer duration. U. As in the French word mur, or the German über. U. In case you are not familiar with either the French or German sounds, try this procedure. Put your lips in the position for oo, as in the vowel of the English soon. But try to pronounce the sound e of the English seen while still maintaining this rounded lip position. The result should be u, the sound of upsilon. Omega, like eta, is pronounced both long and open. Aw, as in the English words saw and raw. Aw. We come now to the pronunciation of the diphthongs. A diphthong is actually a combination of two vowels which glide together within the bounds of one syllable. Diphthongs are always considered quantitatively long, apart from certain exceptions in poetry. Starting with those diphthongs which begin with alpha, we have first alpha iota, which is pronounced I, like the letters EI in the English word height, I. Alpha upsilon is pronounced ow, like the letters OW in the English word now, ow. The first diphthong beginning with epsilon, the combination epsilon iota, was in the classical period not pronounced as a diphthong. It was actually pronounced as a long epsilon, e, somewhat like the first part of the diphthong ai in the English word rain. Even closer would be the vowel sound in the German word see, e. Epsilon upsilon does not, to my knowledge, have any close parallel to sounds in English or in other commonly studied modern languages, but it should not be difficult to grasp. It is pronounced eo, a glide from the sound of epsilon, e, to that of u, eo. Notice that the final element of this diphthong, eo, resembles the u sound heard at the end of the diphthong ow. The diphthong eta upsilon is not too frequently used in ancient Greek. Like the diphthong epsilon upsilon, it has no close phonetic equivalent in the familiar modern languages. It is pronounced ow, a glide from the sound of eta, a, to that of oo, ow. Once more, the final element of this diphthong ow resembles the oo sound heard at the end of the diphthongs ow and eo. The diphthong omicron iota is simple to learn. It is pronounced oi, as in the English words soil and boy. Oi. The combination omicron upsilon was in the classical period, like the combination epsilon iota, not pronounced as a diphthong. Rather, it was pronounced oo, as in the English words tool and fool. Oo. The diphthong upsilon iota was another relatively infrequent combination in ancient Greek, and also has no close counterpart in the familiar modern languages. It is pronounced uy, a glide from the sound of upsilon, u, to that of the English Y sound, ya. Again, uya. Perhaps the most frequently found use of the diphthong ypsilon iota is in the Greek word for sun, S-O-N, which is hyos, hyos. There is a category of diphthongs in ancient Greek known as long diphthongs. These are principally three in number and are generally printed in Greek texts as alpha with an iota subscript, eta with an iota subscript, and omega with an iota subscript. The practice of writing the alpha, the eta, and the omega with an iota subscript is a post-classical Byzantine invention. In the classical period, these iotas were written not subscript, but adscript. That is, they were written not underneath the letters, but on the same level as the alpha, eta, and omega, and appeared simply as alpha iota, eta iota, and omega iota. We also know that the iota element in these combinations was pronounced in the classical period, and this is what we should aim for in our own pronunciation of ancient Greek. In each case, the sound begins with a long vowel, alpha, eta, or omega, and then glides to an end with a short iota. Before another vowel, the iota element almost naturally moves to the pronunciation y, like an English y. And so, the long diphthong alpha iota, or alpha iota subscript, is pronounced I. Somewhat like the letters AI in the English word aisle, I. Be careful to keep the first vowel of this diphthong long to prevent confusion with the corresponding short alpha iota diphthong I. The long diphthong eta iota, or eta iota subscript, is pronounced A, beginning with the eta sound and then gliding to the short iota. A. The long diphthong omega iota, or omega iota subscript, is pronounced oi, beginning with the omega sound and then gliding to the short iota, somewhat like a drawled English toil. Oi. A final consideration concerning vowels and diphthongs, or more specifically, initial vowels and diphthongs, is the question of aspiration or breathing. Certain words which begin with a vowel or diphthong have an aspiration, similar to the English H in the word hot, immediately prior to the sounding of the vowel or diphthong. Other words have no aspiration or H sound prior to an initial vowel or diphthong. A word which begins with an aspirated vowel or diphthong is said to have a rough breathing, and this is indicated in writing by placing a sign which resembles an inverted apostrophe over the initial vowel. You may remember that the Greek word for sun, which I used to demonstrate the sound of the diphthong ypsilon iota, namely hyos, hyos, begins with a rough breathing. A word which begins with an unaspirated vowel or diphthong is said to have smooth breathing, and a sign resembling a normal apostrophe is placed over the initial vowel. In the case of a diphthong, the sign for rough or smooth breathing is placed over the second letter of the diphthong. Since there is no general rule as to which words with initial vowels or diphthongs will have smooth or rough breathing, the breathing must be learnt as part of the sound and the spelling of the word. Occasionally, the only way two words in ancient Greek can be distinguished is by the presence or absence of initial aspiration, that is, whether the word has smooth or rough breathing. We heard before of the Greek word for mountain, horos, which has no aspiration and therefore has smooth breathing. If an aspiration is placed at the beginning, producing a rough breathing, namely horos, the meaning of the word changes from mountain to that of boundary. Now that I have presented the various categories of consonants, vowels, and diphthongs, I think it would be useful to recapitulate this aspect of the pronunciation of ancient Greek. Starting from the beginning, I'll proceed through the Greek alphabet, letter by letter, pronouncing each consonant, vowel, or diphthong separately, and leaving a short pause between each one for the listener to practice the sound immediately after it has been heard. The alphabet is printed in the accompanying booklet with the international phonetic symbol placed alongside of each letter. Short alpha, A. Long alpha, A. The diphthong alpha iota, I. The long diphthong alpha iota, or alpha iota subscript, I. The diphthong alpha ypsilon, au. Beta, b. Gamma, g. Gamma before another gamma, or before kappa, chi, or mu, Delta, d. Epsilon, e. The combination epsilon iota, e. The diphthong epsilon ypsilon, eu. Zeta, zd. Eta, a. The long diphthong eta iota, or eta iota subscript, a. The long diphthong eta ypsilon, au. Theta, t. Short iota, e. Long iota, e. Kappa, k. Lambda, l. Mu, Nu, Xi, x. Omicron, o. The diphthong omicron iota, oi. The combination omicron upsilon, u. Pi, p. Rho, r. Sigma, s. Sigma before beta, gamma, delta, or mu, z. Tau, t. Short ypsilon, u. Long ypsilon, u. The diphthong ypsilon iota, u. Phi, p. Chi, k. Psi, ps. Omega, o. The long diphthong omega iota, or omega iota subscript, oi. At this point, it might be helpful to provide some additional practice in the pronunciation of those elements of the Greek vowels and consonants which do not have their clear counterpart in the English phonemic system. I refer especially to the paired unaspirated and aspirated consonants, then to zeta and rho, and finally to certain of the vowels and to the diphthong epsilon ypsilon. First, I'll give the paired unaspirated and aspirated consonants, each pronounced alternately, and each followed by a different vowel or diphthong. In the case of the vowels alpha, iota, and ypsilon, the long quantity of the vowel will be pronounced. I'll leave a pause after each sound for practice. This exercise is printed in the accompanying booklet. the pair kappa and chi. Ka. Ka. Ke. Ke. Ka. Ka. Ki. Ki. Ko. Ko. Ki. Ki. Ko. Ko. Keu. Keu. The pair bi and phi. Ba. Pa. Bi. Pi. Ba. Pa. Bi. Pi. Po. Po. Pi. Pi. Po. Po. Peu. Peu. The pair tau and theta. Ta. Ta. Ti. Ti. Ta. Ta. Ti. Ti. Do. To. Do. Two. Do. To. Do. Tell. Now the consonant zeta. Zda. Zdi. Zda. Zdi. Zdo. Zdu. Zdo. Zdeu. And finally, the consonant rho. Ra. Ri. Ra. Ri. Ro. Ri. Ro. Reu.